Just how big is the racial wealth gap in America? Even if you're aware that it's a problem, you might be shocked by the details. The net wealth of the typical black family in America is only 1/10 that of the typical white family. There are plenty of arguments for why this depressing difference persists, and explanations both historical and present-day abound. Now, New York Times finance reporter Emily Flitter brings a penetrating analysis to the issue in her new book, The White Wall: How Big Finance Bankrupts Black America. Emily covers banking and Wall Street for The Times, and this is her first book. Here she is to share some of her key insights.
I'm Emily Flitter, New York Times finance reporter and author of The White Wall: How Big Finance Bankrupts Black America. Let me tell you a story about an artist who came face to face with something terrifying. In 1991, Deidrea Farmer Pailman was a young New York City hipster. She worked for the city health department. In her spare time, she made art and music. She was black. Deidrea had always been interested in civil rights and the history of black people in the United States. But that summer, when a friend asked her to lead a drum circle at a protest, Deidrea's whole life changed. The protest was at the site of a mass grave. It was discovered by some construction workers who were beginning to build a skyscraper in downtown Manhattan. It was full of the bodies of people captured in Africa and brought to the United States 200 years ago as slaves. The more Deidrea learned about this site and the people who lay buried in it, the more she felt the urge to give up everything and devote herself to their cause, which was also part of her own family's history. This was New York City. This was Wall Street, the engine room of the U.S. economy. She quit her job and went to law school so she could sue big companies for reparations. Why am I talking about this? Because I had an aha moment like Deidrea's. It came when Ricardo Peters, an employee of the largest U.S. bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, approached me with a recording he'd made. He'd caught his boss on tape talking about a customer who should not be helped. She didn't earn her money, he said. She doesn't deserve it. The customer was black. This was not a long time ago. This was in 2017. Ricardo tried to complain about his boss, but instead of listening to his discrimination complaint, JP Morgan officials pretended he had done something wrong, himself, and then they fired him. Ricardo's story called my attention to a huge problem: present-day racism in the financial system. The racial wealth gap is huge. Black households have less than 15% of the amount of wealth that white households have. Here are five reasons why. Number one is racial profiling at banks. I'm talking about when customers first walk in and tellers see them, look at their skin and hair, and how they're dressed and assess their trustworthiness. I don't just think this happens at banks, I know it does. A concerned source leaked me emails from JP Morgan Chase tellers warning each other to avoid certain customers. Some of the emails described obvious bad behavior, like a customer coming in with a card that's been reported stolen or presenting an ID that is proven to be fake. But other emails sounded like this: African-American man tried to cash a check from a business in Texas. Or, an account was opened for a tall African-American male with dreadlocks and facial hair. After fraud was called, the account was restricted. Here is a copy of the payroll check. Can you spot the bad behavior in these examples? I can't. Another email I saw described a black man who came to cash a check, but the tellers didn't believe it was issued to him. He got upset and left the branch, and after he was gone, the tellers called the people who issued the check, and they confirmed it had been issued to the man. The tellers described him as a very young African-American male with blonde dreads. That's just the beginning of what happens to black bank customers. Mystery shopper studies have shown they get offered fewer services and are sometimes discouraged from applying for loans. This posed a particular problem in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, when the federal government gave banks the job of distributing small business aid money in the form of forgivable loans. Black business owners really struggled to get them. Some didn't make it. Number two is HR. When employees of big financial institutions experience discrimination, they are told they should report it to human resources and get help. But when I looked into what really happens when they do report these cases, I found that more often than not, things end up going very wrong. Take Keode Odeleye, a managing director at the big international bank Standard Chartered. He had a huge job overseeing corporate finance in Nigeria. Basically, he helped companies there raise money. But a new boss came in and started moving people around, and slowly Keode and his colleagues realized that this boss was pushing all the Black people out of Standard Chartered's Africa business. Keode complained, but Standard Chartered didn't stop his boss from continuing to make his life miserable. He eventually wrote to the CEO of the bank, Bill Winters, who wrote back an embarrassing note that smushed Keode's first and last names together, calling him Keode Odeleye, and assured him that Standard Chartered had a zero-tolerance policy for racism. Keode left the bank. These zero-tolerance policies protect banks when employees try to bring legal cases against them. In fact, big companies are so worried about legal liability that most discrimination investigations turn out to be a hunt for evidence that can be used against the bank, and for ways to make sure that none of it ever sees the light of day. But if Black employees can't advance in their careers, they can't build wealth. They can't pass wealth on to their children. They're stuck. Speaking of building wealth and preserving it, number three is insurance. The insurance industry is massively discriminatory. They judge property values by neighborhood quality, so houses in bad neighborhoods don't even get the same kind of policies that houses in, quote, good neighborhoods get. But that's just the beginning. I found loads of Black property owners who couldn't get insurers to make good on their legitimate claims. Like Althea Hawthorne, a retired postal worker in Dallas who had lived in her home for nearly 30 years. No mortgage, no drama, just a peaceful retirement, until a hailstorm punched holes in her roof, and she asked State Farm to pay to repair the damage. Althea told me what it was like when a State Farm agent came to verify her claim. She said he acted like he was doing her a big favor by being there at all. He poo-pooed the contractor she had found, who had estimated the cost of repairs around $10,000. He offered her $250. That's it. Often, Black customers are accused of committing fraud when they try to file insurance claims. Insurers have a trick where they force claimants they don't like to sit for depositions and swear under oath that things really happened the way they say they did. One lawyer told me about a Black couple who were deposed because an insurance adjuster didn't believe they had really bought their sheets and towels from the luxury department store Neiman Marcus. Number four is data. That stuff that's supposed to be the great equalizer. Banks and non-banks are using data more and more often to help them make decisions about which customers to advertise to and how much money to lend them. But when you look at this data, you realize it's made up of all the past activities that have gone on in the financial system. Remember redlining, those maps of cities that banks and municipal authorities shared with each other so they could be on the same page about whom to provide services to and whom to shun? Black people were shunned in this period of time. All of that comes back to haunt Black borrowers now, in the form of lower credit scores, lower home values, and far less generational wealth. Feed that into an algorithm and you get out what you put in. Racism. Number five is corporate gaslighting. All those big promises to fix racial inequality by pledging billions of dollars. For what? I looked into one of those racial equity pledges, JP Morgan's, and I found that most of the $30 billion the bank said it was going to use to fix racial inequality was actually just really lucrative business, like loans to big developers for which the bank gets an affordable housing tax credit. Well, why not, you could say. isn't it still better than nothing, even if only like $2 billion is actual charity? The problem is that people see these pledges and they think they're real. And then they wonder why there's still a problem. If corporate America is so on it, it can't be corporate America's fault anymore, right? Wrong. The more these companies try to speak themselves into virtuousness, the more they drown out the voices of people trying to speak the truth about all of the other things that they're doing wrong. Those truth tellers have a lot less power and money than the big banks have. If these banks really wanted to do better, they could leave off making pledges with dollar values and time limits and just admit that what they're doing is wrong and actually promise to do better, and really do better. The white wall has been right in front of you this whole time, but I bet if you're not Black, you hadn't noticed it. If you don't have to live these truths, you can walk away from them, but they won't go away. And they won't get any better unless everyone faces them together. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. That was Emily Flitter with five big ideas from The White Wall, How Big Finance Bankrupts Black America. Also, have a listen to our book bite for The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together by Heather McGee. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.